This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side, and we're on the phone today with Dinesh D'Souza. He is the author of a number of best-selling books, but most recently, Obama's America, The Unmaking of the American Dream. He's also heavily involved with a terrific movie which is out, which I really recommend you guys see, which is 2016, What It's Going to Look Like If Obama Gets a Second Term. And Mr. D'Souza has a illustrious background. He's a president of King's College. He has been on numerous major media shows. He's written for Forbes, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Atlantic Monthly. He's been given a number of fellowships, the Olin Fellowship, the American Enterprise Institute. He served as a policy advisor to Mr. Reagan, and the accolades go on. We have a short interview in this show, and we're going to be following up on some key points that we just don't have time to handle today, so stay tuned and I'll give you folks information. But first of all, welcome to the show, Dinesh.
Hey, thanks. It's good to be on the show.
You bet. You know, I was really struck by one line out of your book. It's actually on page 6. And you're talking about Obama. Quote, he emphasized in his inauguration speech his goal was remaking America. And he is doing it, recognizing that in order to remake America, he must first unmake America. It is exactly what I've been saying for 2 years and what nobody really wants to believe because of the normalcy bias. I'm going to start off by asking you, number one, tell us about, in your opinion, you know, you've done a lot of research. Folks, this author has traveled to 4 continents. He's interviewed Barack Obama's brother, which we'll talk about in the next show. We're not going to have time today. And there's some really interesting things. And he has his, should we say, he has his spaghetti together in the meat sauce. So, you know, we're talking about how Obama thinks that the rich should pay more taxes. I mean, we hear fair, fair, fair all the time, Dinesh. Tell us exactly what he has planned, in your opinion, and why, for America, but more importantly, what that means to America relative to the family of nations.
Well, Obama is a global guy, and what he wants to do is he wants to promote global fairness, global redistribution, global leveling. And what that means is he wants to shrink America's standard of living. He wants to reduce America's energy consumption. He wants to transfer large amounts of wealth away from America to other countries. He wants to reduce American influence in the Middle East and in the world. He wants to slash our nuclear weapons. He wants to reduce the strength of our military. Again, he's doing this not just because he's evil or he's a traitor or he's anti-American. He's doing it because he subscribes to an ideology which wants a smaller America. He wants us to have less so the rest of the world can have more.
Well, you know, in your book, you talk about kind of, and you have a previous book, The Roots of Obama Rage, which is terrific, too. But in this book, you talk about his background, the influences on his life, the fact that he felt abandoned by his father. Perhaps he's even trying to prove something to the dead father that abandoned him. And you talk about how he views, because of his background, America as a colonial power. And therefore, shall we say, part of the evil empire in the world, exactly the opposite of the thinking of most Americans. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, for Reagan, you know, the Soviet Union was the evil empire. I believe for Obama, America is. We're the bad guys. Not Iran, not North Korea, we are. And so what Obama wants to do is what we wanted to do to the Soviet Union. We wanted to contain the Soviet Union, to roll it back, if possible, to delegitimize it. And that's kind of what Obama has been doing to American power around the world. Well, Obama also wants to redistribute America's wealth. So when he talks about the 1%, the 99%, most people think he's talking about redistribution in America. But no, Obama also wants to realign America in the world. And so when he thinks of the 1%, that's America, the whole country. We're the 1%. And there are 99 hungry nations encircling America, all of whom want America's wealth, America's standard of living, America's power, America's cultural influence. So that's the way to understand Obama, that he looks at America to some degree from the outside in, and he's trying to knock America off its pedestal and take it down from being number one so that we can be a normal country, just another country at the big table of nations.
And he holds that same abhorrence for all our major allies and other Western countries, does he not?
Well, yeah, he sees our allies as extensions of us, and some allies are even more odious than others. For example, I think Obama has a particular animus toward the state of Israel. Why? Because he sees Israel as a little colonial power that is occupying Muslim land. And so Obama has a sympathy for the Palestinians who are trying to push Israel out to get rid of Israel and restore that land to the Muslims. So that's Obama's framework. He sees Iraq, he sees Afghanistan, he sees the Muslims fighting against America in those countries as sort of anti-colonial freedom fighters, similar to Mandela or Gandhi or his own father in Kenya fighting against the British.
And the bottom line is, you know, it was not a mistake at the Democratic Convention. The exclusion of the words God, Jerusalem, etc. from the Democratic platform, which various reports say he either did or did not see, in your opinion would be absolutely purposeful, yes?
Yes. I mean, I think we're seeing a Democratic Party remake itself to some degree in Obama's image. Bob Woodward details in his book how in the first term a number of people in the Defense Department, in the State Department, including Hillary Clinton, in the CIA, would try to oppose Obama. But one by one, he was able to overcome them so that the foreign policy became his and really his alone. So he is, in a way, remaking the Democratic Party in his own image. It's rather startling that we have a president, you know, elected in a way to defend and promote American interests, who is, for ideological reasons, working to undermine them. That's my point about Obama. He isn't sort of the presiding instrument of American decline. He is the architect of it.
Yes, and I think that's a perfect phrase. You know, let's stay on Israel for just a moment. So he has this vision of the United States of Islam. Okay, that's a term you use in your book. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think this all ties into his animus toward Israel. And in my opinion, and I believe reading your book, in yours, he couldn't care less. In fact, he might even clap his hands if Iran got their hands on a nuclear device.
Well, you've got to look at it from the anti-colonial point of view. And when Obama looks at the Middle East, he says to himself, in effect, well, how many nuclear bombs do the Muslims have? Well, none. Pakistan has a bomb, but they're not in the Middle East. Well, how many bombs do the Jews have? Well, they have a few, quite a few. How many bombs does America have? A lot. So from the point of view of global fairness, is the problem that Iran is trying to go from zero to one? Or is the problem that America has thousands of nuclear bombs and has dropped two of them on Hiroshima and Nagasaki? So what Obama's doing is completely consistent with that. He's basically doing, you know, not a whole lot to stop Iran from getting a bomb, but he's doing a lot to slash America's nuclear arsenal. Now, he claims to have the dream of the world without nuclear weapons, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line of it is the only country whose nuclear weapons Obama can actually slash are ours. So while China is modernizing its nuclear arsenal, and so is India, and North Korea is adding to its stockpile, you know, here's Obama, one by one, you know, in a sense, shrinking America's arsenal from 5,000 weapons, 5,000 nuclear bombs to 1,500. Now he's asked the Pentagon to study going down to 300, and you can see that he has a vision for America and the world to have no nuclear weapons at all.
Which, of course, the Russians are delighted with, because it's kind of our unilateral participation in the START treaty.
Well, what Obama's really doing is he's leveling the nuclear playing field globally. He's trying to restore almost a world before colonialism, when there wasn't a single superpower. You had multiple powers, multiple centers of influence. So I think what Obama would like to see is he'd like to see America go down, and Brazil and China and India and Russia come up, so that there's kind of an equal distribution of power on the global stage.
Which would also feed his whole thought that there should be a global kumbaya government. In other words,
well, I don't know if he wants to, you know,
in terms of a nation, but it kind of a collection of nations, you know, nations that sit around and reach consensus rather than somebody who leads.
Well, think about how ambitious Obama's goal is. You know, this is why it's so, I think, foolish for some conservatives to say, oh, he's an amateur, he's inept, he's a bungler, he doesn't know what he's doing. He is remarkably successful in achieving his goals. Bill and Hillary Clinton couldn't get health care through. He did. almost single-handedly, he's transformed American foreign policy. He's reoriented the relationship of the individual in America to the state. He has massively increased state intervention, government intervention, in hospitals, in insurance, in banking, in finance, in energy, in automobiles, in a whole bunch of fields. And he's done this almost single-handedly. So I respect the guy. I think that his dream is not the American dream. It's his father's dream. But he's pretty effective in getting things done when he wants to get them done.
I happen to agree. I think the guy is brilliant. He has a plan, and he's executing it flawlessly. Some people have compared him to Jimmy Carter. Now, Jimmy Carter had a whole host of problems. He had many of the same policies: high taxes, more government spending, more government control, weaker foreign policy. But, you know, would you agree that Jimmy Carter was kind of a policy muff? He was a liberal policy muff who was not too apt, whereas Obama is an ideologue, rigid ideologue, and brilliant and highly competent.
I think that's an important and accurate distinction. A good example of it would be in Iran, where Carter, because he was a kind of an apostle of human rights, didn't like the Shah of Iran. Now, the Shah was an American ally, but he was also a dictator. He had a secret police. So to be consistent, Carter basically started pulling American support away from the Shah. Basically, we pulled the Persian rug out from under the Shah. The Shah collapsed. He abdicated, and we got Khomeini. Now, it was not Carter's intention to get Khomeini. We got the radical Muslims through Carter's bungling ineptitude. Now, something very different is happening today with Obama in Egypt. Here's our ally, Mubarak. He's a dictator. He was a dictator. He's like the Shah, also a friend of the United States. Now, Obama didn't start the Arab Spring. It started on its own. But what's interesting is that there is now going on in Egypt a power struggle between the Egyptian military and the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Muslim Brotherhood is the largest organization of radical Islam in the world. So who's Obama supporting? Well, Obama has consistently been notifying the Egyptian military, you people better step aside. You better turn over power to the Muslim Brotherhood, because if you don't, we, America, will start cutting off military aid to Egypt. So Obama is acting...
All the while lying to the American public about the benevolence of the Muslim Brotherhood and the fact that he doesn't support them.
Right. I mean, the fact is Obama is acting decisively to undermine the Egyptian military and turn over another major country of the Middle East into the hands of the radical Muslims. Well, look, there are only three significant countries that define the region. There's Iran, there's Egypt, and there's Saudi Arabia. So my fear or my concern in a second Obama term is that Obama will then, you know, in the sense... pull the same trick on the Saudis. Hey, royal family, we're not going to support you unless you agree to put yourself on the ballot. You guys run against the Muslim Brotherhood. Let's see who wins. And I think I could safely predict that the Muslim Brotherhood is likely to win that election.
Absolutely.
So if all that happens, then all the three major countries of the Middle East fall into radical Islamic hands, and we could begin to see the restoration of Islam as a global power, something we haven't really seen in almost five centuries.
And he's one step closer to eliminating our closest, quote-unquote, colonial ally that he detests, Israel.
Yeah, Israel is definitely not Obama's favorite. And I think Netanyahu, the prime minister, knows it very well. Obama's, in a sense, trying to neutralize Israel, prevent Israel from taking any actions before the election, so that he can force Israel not to take any actions after the election. So there's a sort of a dangerous game going on here, and Israel, I think, would be quite imperiled, I fear, in a second Obama term.
And I think you would agree that the American public, despite the first mandate of the president, which is to protect their security, would be quite imperiled also.
Well, America has been, in the last 70 years, a really privileged country. We've been living in the American era. And so America is the dominant power. You see this when you travel abroad. The American passport is better than anyone else's passport. American money, the dollar, can be used just about anywhere. American culture is visible and spreading throughout the world. So this is what it means to be the world's number one. And I think Obama wants to end that. He wants to finish off the American era. And I think he could do it. He could possibly pull it off. And it would be, what a feat it would be for one man in 8 years to have taken a whole country that has taken 200 years to build, that has sort of, you know, made its way to the top of the pedestal, to be able to bring it down in just 8 years in two terms. I mean, what an achievement this would be.
Although I would interject that he can't do it without the will of the American people. And you know what worries me more about Obama, who I see clearly, I think some others see clearly, you certainly see clearly, is how does this guy have a 50% approval rating? That's what concerns me more than anything.
Well, he has a secret weapon. I mean, Obama has a secret weapon, and that secret weapon is his ability to confer on white America what may be called a certificate of racial absolution. It's almost like Obama can say to white America, you know, by voting for me, you get to prove not only to the world, not only to your friends, but to yourself, that you are a morally wonderful human being. You're not a racist. You're not associated with America's past. You are America's future. This is, by the way, why guys like Chris Matthews and Andrew Sullivan, you know, Jonathan Alter at Newsweek and so on, this is why these guys are so uncritical. They become almost worshipful in the way they deal with Obama. And the reason is that he is, in a way, flattering them morally. He's allowing them to pat themselves on the back and think what ethically spectacular people they are for supporting Obama. So we have large elements of the press that regard it as essential to America's own reputation that Obama be reelected. And these are people whose main job is to keep the American people from really knowing the kind of damaging information that might cause them to think twice about voting for Obama.
Well said. And I would couple that, too, see if you agree with Americans' normalcy bias. I mean, most Americans cannot get their hands around the out-of-the-box concept that you have a president who is antithesis to American ideals and values. Would you agree with that?
Well, see, the thing is, for 4 years, a lot of people say he's anti-American, he wants to destroy America. I think the missing question is why. People are reluctant to believe something if they don't know why would someone do that. You know, if someone said Obama's a Maoist, you'd say, well, how do you become a Maoist? Has he been reading the Little Red Book? You know, what's the story that can convince me that he's adopted such a bizarre and strange and foreign ideology? Well, this is where our film comes in. I mean, the point of 2016 is you slowly follow the Obama story. At critical points, you hear Obama himself talk. And you begin to see, oh, I get it. Now I see how he became the man he is. Now I see that it isn't just that he's a secret Muslim. He's not a Manchurian candidate being manipulated by some cabal. No, this is how he's adopted this ideology, this dream from his father, and this is why he's doing the things he is. And moreover, this is why he can't change. These ideas are, in a sense, stamped onto his psyche, part of who he is.
And I think your film and your book does a great job of laying that foundation so that the end result, you know, what you're trying to get across to people, is completely believable. I mean, it fits perfectly in the overall puzzle of this man, Barack Obama, or Barry, as I call him. But let me ask another question. You know, you were talking about how he really doesn't he regards America as the 1% of nations, and therefore the population of America as all one percenters in terms of global thinking. If you bring that to the next logical conclusion, that means that all his diatribes about the middle class and his concern for the middle class is so much hogwash, because in his mind, the American middle class is the top 1% of the world population.
And not just the middle class, even the poor. I mean, if you make $20,000 a year, you're poor, if you have a family, by American standards, but you're not poor by world standards. So if you look at American-style poverty and third-world poverty, there's just no comparison. So it could be that if you look at the world and you're a global redistributionist, then you think that even poor people have to pay in America to make the world a fairer place. And by the way, Obama realizes he can't do this in an obvious way. He can't propose, you know, a $10 trillion foreign aid program. Even a completely Democratic Congress wouldn't go for that. So what does he do? He uses debt. Debt is sort of his weapon of global redistribution, because by piling on trillions of dollars of debt, what happens? Well, that debt is then owed by our children and grandchildren. And owed to whom? Well, a considerable part of it is owned by the foreigners. Foreign governments, sovereign funds, individuals. So that money is owed to Kuwaitis and Saudis and Chinese. So as we pay it back, large amounts of wealth become transferred away from America and toward the rest of the world.
Which also ties in, I want to come back to debt, but which also ties into the energy policy, right? I mean, America could be, literally, and could have been, self-sufficient in energy. We have the reserves. We have the technical know-how. In fact, we lead the world in it, probably much to his chagrin. The bottom line is we continue to ship $500 billion, give or take, to other, quote-unquote, third-world countries throughout the globe every year. I mean, that is also part of the redistribution theory and obviously adds to the national debt, too. Wouldn't you agree?
I think Obama is often misunderstood to be a an environmentalist or captive to the environmental lobby.
That's his cloak.
Well, that's what people, right, and many people
right.
on the left and the right misunderstand him that way. They think, well, he's just, you know, doing his best Al Gore imitation, that he's trying to reduce the global carbon usage of the world. But no, while Obama is blocking oil drilling here, the moratorium, he delays the Keystone Pipeline, he imposes regulations that block new types of new technologies and drilling in new areas. Well, when he goes abroad, he sings a different tune. He's then an apostle of oil drilling. He's all for it. And, of course, he uses U.S. taxpayer money to bankroll, to provide loans and loan guarantees to drill in Mexico, in Colombia, in Brazil. So, you know, why the double standard? Why is he for drilling over there but not over here? Well, he's a global energy redistributor. He wants those guys to have more, so we and he's willing for us to have less. He's trying to enrich the previously, and he wants us to pay more. He's enriching the previously colonized countries at the expense of the colonizer.
Exactly. So when Obama talks to folks and they listen with mouths agape about his concern for the middle class and his concern for the poor. This is so much diatribe to get reelected, right? I mean, this is basically Saul Alinsky in action. The means justifies the end. What you do, whatever you have to do to get in a position of power to affect the ideology which is best for all in your mind.
Yes, I'm going to have to run after this, but let me just say that I think that's right. Obama has learned that he has to be a man of smoke and mirrors. He has to put on a camouflage. He needs to convey an image. You know, and we know this. I mean, look, go back and, you know, listen to the Obama of 2004 at the Democratic Convention. I'm a unifier. I'm a healer. I'm a centrist. You know, you almost feel like laughing when you hear that Obama now, because in retrospect, we see that that was all an illusion. That was all a camouflage. That's not the real Obama. He doesn't even know how to be that way. So, so we know that Obama is a guy who is expert at putting on a show. And the real Obama, on the other hand, can be discerned in two ways, one by looking at his actions and the other by looking at his background. This is a guy who's been tutored by a former communist, a member of the Palestine National Council, a domestic terrorist, Bill Ayers, an incendiary preacher whose trademark phrase is "Goddamn America." So, I mean, look at the guys Obama chose to associate with, not for years, but for decades. And you'll see the influences that have shaped his mind. This is the kind of guy he is. So if you like who he is and you like what he's doing, you should vote for him. And if not, you should reconsider.
Exactly. And by the way, on page 83 of your book, you have Wright's full sermon, you know, from that famous line, GD America. And I really suggest people read it because that really puts everything in context. Dinesh, it's been an absolute pleasure. In fact, I'm delighted to have interviewed you. Thank you very much for your time. I'll look forward to a follow-up because there's a bunch of things people need to know that we did not have time to cover today. So I hope that movie just does great for you. And folks, 2016, go see it. And Obama's America, Unmaking the American Dream, grab it, read it, pass it on to your friends. Thank you, Dinesh.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, folks, I think that's an interview that you might remember for quite some time. This guy is brilliant, by the way. The Dinesh D'Souza is a brilliant man. I didn't even get into half of his accolades. I mean, it would fill several sheets of paper. This guy has been around the block. He did his research. I think you can tell by the way he responded to my questions. There's no hesitation. He's sure of his facts. He's sure of how he has put the facts together to create a picture. And look, you don't need Dinesh D'Souza to explain all this to you. You can see it for yourselves, folks. I've been jumping up and down about these matters for 2 years. I can't tell you all the emails I've had from people saying, you're crazy, da-da-da-da-da, or, you know, he's just incompetent, or he's just inexperienced, or he just doesn't know what he's doing, and his heart's in the right place. Wrong. I want you to know that Barack Obama's heart is in exactly the wrong place when it comes to American ideals. He is a brilliant man who has a plan and is executing it flawlessly, and every single person who pulls that voting lever this coming November for this man is enabling his theory of colonialism, America as a colonial power that needs to be taken down in the world of nations, and Americans as colonialists who need to be taken down several notches in terms of all the other populations of the world. This is what he's after. No amount of smiles, no amount of lies, no amount of glib talk, no amount of great oratory, no amount of whatever nonsense Bill Clinton, we're going to talk about that in a moment, Bill Clinton comes up with at the convention, in complete contradiction of his earlier blasting of Obama as recently as several weeks ago on national TV. None of this matters. Here's what matters. Our country is in peril. It's in peril because of a plan. The architect of the plan, in Dinesh's words, and I agree with 100%, is Barack Obama and his minions. You get rid of Barack Obama in November, many of his minions, at least his czars and the shadow government he has set up, depart. There's still many more to weed out, to defeat in elections, to reveal and expose, and I plan to do that in my shows. But this guy is dangerous to you, your children, your children's children, and to the country, which I assume, in fact, I'm quite sure, that the great majority of you listening to this show love. And it's absolutely the death knell to the values and ideals that we all hold dear and which we call uniquely American, the American spirit. This man wants this all to vanish from the face of the earth, and he has a hell of a head start. This debt is not an accident, folks. Him not having a budget for 3 years is not an accident. Him allowing the Senate committee to fail because of his lack of leadership to get the sequestration, which is a, you know, $550 billion or so, is cuts in defense spending, which tie right into his whole concept of reducing America not only financially, not only in terms of leadership and moral equivalency in the world, but in terms of a superpower able to defend and promote its interests, which he disagrees with. He disagrees with the interests of America. We are just another colonial power. You know, the analogy is Ahmadinejad in Iran stands up and calls us the big Satan and Israel the little Satan. I was thinking about this during the interview. Really, Obama, in Obama's minds, we are exactly what the president of Iran and the Ayatollah believe us to be in Obama's mind, right? We are the big colonial power, and Israel's the little colonial power. And in his mind, the colonial powers are the Satans of the planet. They're the ones that have to be eliminated or taken down a notch. I really want you to think about this. I really recommend that you get Dinesh's book. I really do. I'm not, you know, I have no stake in his book. I got no skin in the game. I don't recommend books often. I recommended Fool Me Twice from my interview with Brenda Elliott a few weeks back because that's a kind of, it's the same type of thing, except that it projects, as does Dinesh in his book, what Obama would do if he unbelievably and unfortunately gets a second term. by lying to you, by playing the race card, by appealing to, as Dinesh would say, your moral values. You need to get the book and you need to see the movie. You need to make sure your friends do. And I don't mean just your friends in Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Nebraska, and Utah. I mean your friends everywhere, particularly your friends, folks, in the swing states, Ohio, Virginia, Florida. You got friends there? Pick up the phone. Get involved in this. This is your life. This is your country. This is your kids. This is your grandkids. Time's about up. All right, we're going to take a little break right now, and when I come back, we're going to cover several subjects, including, much to your interest, because you know it is my MO to bring you news that long before you've heard news anywhere else. I was kind of amused today. I'm going to digress for just a moment. I was kind of amused today. I was seeing stories about the Spanish company that's buying American electronic voting machines. You know, I think I had that story 3 or 4 weeks ago. I was amused to see in some of the major financial e-zines today a story about Europe and the fact that it's completely cratered and they're moving from one band-aid to the next. I think I brought you that like 9 months ago. And I'm going to bring you something else. You guys are going to just love this. You know, for all the hoopla, this goes right back to Obama's ability to spin a lie, right? For all the hoopla about Bain Capital, you know, it's evil and it's private equity and it's bad and yada, 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 yada. Wait till I tell you the list of the people who are the investors in Bain Capital. It'll make your eyes pop in their head. We'll see you in just a little bit. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. KFEZ in Colorado Springs, KGAB, and the Town Square Network out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, serving the Intermountain West, and WebTalkRadio.net. Talk to you in a few. All right, we're back. So, who parks their cash at Bain Capital? By the way, Bain Capital, because nobody ever seems to put it up on the tube or in the papers, B-A-I-N. Now, Romney has several companies. Bain is kind of the one that you know him most for. But, you know, the Democrats keep beating on Bain, and they keep beating on what Bain has done and Bain has not done and whether or not they export jobs and, you know, how much money they've made, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You'll just love this. So, here are some of the chief beneficiaries of Bain's economic stewardship. By the way, this is all public documents, news accounts, and freedom of information requests to track private equity holdings, which have been done by various study groups. So, since the year 2000, there's been $1.56 billion that's been invested and or entrusted, however you want to look at it, to Bain Capital. How about the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund? Gee, where's Barack Obama from? Chicago? Huh. And isn't his best buddy Rahm? Isn't he the mayor of Chicago? Well, they have $2.2 million invested with Bain Capital. The Indiana Public Retirement System, $39 million. Iowa Public Employees Retirement System, $177 million. By the way, many of these public employees, these are union pension funds. Who's a supporter of Barack Obama? Who gives them hundreds of millions of dollars for this campaign? $400 million union contributions in 2008. And they blast Bain, and they blast Romney for being associated with Bain. But where do they have their money? They have their money with Romney and Bain. Isn't that amazing? Maryland, a Democratic state with, you know, you've heard the Maryland governor. He's a mouthy supporter of Obama. Their state retirement and pension funds have $117.5 million with Bain. State Teachers Retirement System of Ohio, $767 million. Pennsylvania state employees, $231 million. Rhode Island, $25 million. San Diego County Employees Retirement Association, $23.5 million. Texas Teacher Retirement System, $122 million. Tennessee, the list goes on and on and on. But it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop there. I mean, these are the savings of millions of unionized teachers, social workers, public health personnel, first responders, right? Government employees, many of them in government unions, right? The backbone, or at least he thinks, hopefully he's wrong, the backbone of Obama's support, the guy who bashes Bain, and they're invested in Bain. Pretty amazing. There's universities, including Ivy League universities, which espouse liberal ideas, ideals, and let's face it, put out reports, you know, that benefit their candidate, Mr. Obama. I mean, they're really talking heads for them. How about Purdue University, $16 million. University of California, hardly a conservative think tank, $225 million. University of Michigan, another liberal school, $130 million. University of Virginia, $20 million. University of Washington, $33 million. It doesn't stop there, guys. It doesn't stop there. Here's some more liberal bastions that have money with Bain, bash Bain, allow their candidate to bash Bain, and, shall we say, talk out of both sides of their mouth. The Metropolitan Museum of Art. That's correct. The Doris Duke Foundation. How about this one? You'll love it. The Oprah Winfrey Foundation. Do you remember Oprah flopping around there in 2008? I mean, since she's been shunned by Valerie Jarrett and Michelle Obama. But in 2008, she put herself on the line. For the first time, she endorsed a candidate. Who was that? Barack Obama. What's he doing? Bashing Bain. Do you know where Oprah has her money? Wow. Isn't that amazing? The Oprah Winfrey Foundation. That's pretty amazing. Well, look, the bottom line is that this kind of proves my point. Capitalism works, and even those who decry capitalism, know it works, and their money flows to those who know capitalism to make their money work for them. I think this is the height of hypocrisy. This is the proof of the pudding. You know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And when you sit down at the table with these folks, their pudding is in the Bain pudding bowl, despite their knocking it. I want to talk to you a little bit about a very disturbing article I had that I don't even know how I found it, to be honest with you. I was kind of perusing some Israeli English language newspapers, and there was an article by a guy by the name of Ted Bellman who contributes, as I can see in doing my research, quite a bit to the Israeli press. And he's now living in Jerusalem. Okay, in the Foreign Policy Journal, the pro-Israel community is like hot and bothered. Okay, and it's a study that's been done, believe it or not. Preparing for a post-Israel Middle East. Think about that. There's now a study being done. It's 82 pages, so this is not a few pages of nonsensical wanderings, mind wanderings by someone. It's an 82-page analysis, and it concludes that the American national interest is fundamentally at odds with that of Israel. Gee, that kind of ties right into the interview we just had, huh? I don't think American policy was ever fundamentally at odds with Israel before Barack Obama. But I think Dinesh did a great job of explaining why it's at odds now, right? Big Satan, little Satan, big colonial, little colonial, synonymous. So the authors basically conclude that Israel is currently the greatest threat to U.S. national interests because its nature and actions, I'm quoting, prevent normal U.S. relations with Arab and Muslim countries and to a growing degree the wider international community. That's a quote. Now, does that tie into what we just talked about, unfortunately not with enough time, with Dinesh in this interview? You know, these are all dots, folks. I love to use the word dots, but I really think dots are important things, and the more dots you have, the easier they are to connect. And I think this is just one more, this is kind of icing on the cake of what I'm trying to get across to you. What Dinesh hopefully helped in that regard during this interview, and I think definitely if you read his book and see his movie, will kind of, you'll have an epiphany. You'll not only understand this uneasy feeling that you're having that something is horribly wrong, and I don't mean just the economy. I don't mean just America's quote-unquote decline in international standing. We've suffered all that before. We've come through with flying colors. That's the one thing Joe Biden was correct on. No, I think it's going to give substance to this gnawing feeling you have below those normal feelings, the feeling that something much bigger is wrong this time, because something much bigger is wrong this time. And these are the symptoms of this fatal illness we have contracted and that we need to exercise through our election rights in November, and thereafter, I might add. So I'm going to continue with this study. They quote Obama. Okay, this ties it in a little bit more. Mr. Obama declared that resolving the long-running Middle East dispute was a vital national security interest to the United States. Mr. Obama said that conflicts like the one in the Middle East end up costing us significantly in terms of both blood and treasure. Now, you know, this is the cloak, right? Dinesh told you a little bit about the cloak of environmentalism that Obama uses to stifle American energy development while promoting it in third world countries using American taxpayer dollars, of course. Listen, the bottom line is Obama has a world vision, and he has an American vision. And his vision is that America is just another member of the global community. We are not a leader. We are not exceptional. Okay, it's one of the things that we did not get into with Dinesh, Reverend Wright, and black liberation theology. We're going to in the next interview. Don't miss that. He has the entire sermon from which that GD America line was taken. And when you read that entire sermon and you think about Barack and Michelle Obama voluntarily sitting in those pews for 20 years, calling this man their best friend, having him baptize their children, Obama calling him a mentor in his books, I think more dots will fall into place with you. You're going to have another epiphany for sure. Absolutely. Listen, I can go on with this article, and I'm going to cover this more, I think, in an upcoming show, but I did want to alert you to it. If you want to see this, if you want to see the article, you can go to, let's see here, you can go to Franklin Lamb Foreign Policy Journal. That's Franklin Lamb, L-A-M-B, Foreign Policy Journal. Okay, and look for his article on the Ted Bellman B-E-L-M-A-N article. You should read it. I think that you will, why don't we say you won't enjoy it, but you will be, unfortunately, enlightened or endarkened, however you'd like to see it. I'm going to take a little break now. When I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about Europe. We're going to finish up with some tips for MIT, which is a wildly popular segment. And we're going to get ready for our upcoming interview next week with Ed Klein, the author of The Amateur. Should be very interesting. I plan to ask Ed because his viewpoint, I mean, he kind of agrees with everything Dinesh says in terms of policy and intent, but he says that it's all because Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He's in that crowd that believes Obama is, you know, just incompetent. Not an exceptional guy, not brilliant, just doesn't know what he's doing. He's just flubbing everything. And I'm gonna ask Ed about that very specifically because I think Ed, even though he's right in what he says about Obama and Obama's plans, he's absolutely dead wrong in the why of how it's happening and the why of Obama's actions and lack of actions and in the why of Obama's continuing pattern of smiling lies to an American public, which, based on this week's polls, seems to be lapping it up once again, right? Fool me twice. Be back in just a bit. Welcome back, folks. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. KGAB AM 650 on your dial, Cheyenne and the Town Square Network throughout the Rocky Mountain, Intermountain West, and webtalkradio.net. And our new listeners, welcome again, listeners, KFEZ in Colorado Springs and environs. Okay, we're into the last segment of the show. I've been jumping up and down about Europe for 9 months. I have a show entitled, if you go back into the archives, and for you new listeners, there's two ways to do it. You can Google Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. That's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio, and the next umpty-ump pages of Google are all these radio shows, and you can click on any one, which will bring you to a website which has all the archives. Or you can go to webtalkradio.net. You can type in the name of the show on the right side, or my name, Reed Lance Rosenthal, and you will come up with the archives also. But if you go back in time, we're talking about last September, August, September, October of 2011, I was jumping up and down about Europe. In fact, I had a show called Greece is California. Later, there were shows on the major networks 9 months later called Greece is California, and they kind of mimicked mine. I took it as a great compliment. A number of my friends said, oh, you know, you ought to call them and get credit. No. You know, all the credit I need is as many people as possible hear these ideas backed by facts, backed by research, so that they can draw conclusions as informed voters. And, you know, as Dinesh said, if in the final analysis what you want is a diminished America, a more equally mediocre society in America, without winners and losers, and America as just another seat at the great table of nations, unable to defend itself and broke, and I'm not being facetious here, then you should vote for Barack Obama. But if you want to see the Constitution upheld, the pillars of America, which is faith, the family, the Constitution, if you want to see that upheld, and you are, in my opinion, concerned about your future, your children's future, and your children's children's future, then probably a vote for Barack Obama is not what you ought to do in November. And I might add that a vote for any other candidate is a vote for Barack Obama. So you Ron Paul supporters, you Constitutional Party supporters, I salute you. I'm glad that you have your guy. But let me tell you, voting for your guy now sends no message other than a reality, and that is the election of Barack Obama for a second term. You've heard from Brenda Elliott what he has planned. You've heard from me for 2 years what he has planned. You've heard from Dinesh today as to why he has it planned, and I think a very scholarly view of some of the things he's doing. When I have him back on, we're going to talk about some of the things he will do if he's reelected. So you guys who are thinking about voting for some third candidate in these close states, particularly folks who are listening to me in Colorado right now, that's a thrown-away vote. Okay, work your butts off for the next 4 years to get the Constitutional Party or whatever party you want on the ballot in a position to win. But for this election, which in my opinion is the most important, maybe even more important than 1860, Abraham Lincoln, don't vote for Barack Obama by not voting at all or not voting for Mitt Romney, okay? And, you know, Mitt Romney is not my poster child for president, although I think he'll do a really good job. I think the guy is conscientious. I think he's honest. We know he has plenty of money. He can't be bought. He worked in Massachusetts for a dollar a year. He's already said he will serve as president for a dollar a year. I don't see Mr. Obama with all his fair nonsense. I don't see him giving back his salary to the people. Do you? How about his book royalties? You know, the guy is worth over $7 or $8 million. He's making $72,000 a month. I have the backup right here. You can look at his tax returns on extemporaneous investments over and above his presidential salary. I don't see that money going to the poor folks. I don't see that money getting redistributed to make everything fair. In fact, when we have Dinesh back, we're going to talk about his interview with his half-brother who lives in poverty and squalor in Nairobi, Kenya, and how Barack Obama won't even meet with him, never mind send him a dime to help this guy. Think about that. Actions speak louder than words, folks. Glib words with a nice smile and a wave of the hand means squat. Okay? Walk the walk. Talk is cheap. All right. So, in Europe, there was an article in Money News from Jim Rogers, who, by the way, is a really, really, really smart international economist. Quote, Eurozone will pay terrible price for excessive spending. He goes on in the article to talk about, hey, here, let me give you this quote. This is great. Every 3 or 4 months, Eurozone politicians have a summit, and they say, okay, guys, everything is okay now. The market goes up. But we're getting a little tired of this, and the market is getting a little tired of this, too. And he goes on to talk about, let me give you another quote. These guys have been saying the same old garbage for a long time. It's not a game changer. It's good for the market for maybe a month. He was talking about the most recent summit of the ECB, right, the European Community Board Bank, excuse me. And look, Europe is toast, okay? Germany is about the only solvent nation in Europe, along with some of the smaller northern Scandinavian countries, who, by the way, have surpassed us in competitiveness now. You heard about that on this radio show before the main media had it over the last few days also. Okay, we're now number 7. We have slipped from number 1 to number 7 in the blink of a 4-year term of Barack Obama. And don't think it's not on purpose. And it ties right into what we've been talking about today and what I've been talking about for 2 years. When he talks about, in his headline, the Eurozone will pay terrible price for excessive spending. Folks, think about this. Are we different than Europe? If we continue our path of excessive spending, do you think that we too will be faced with paying a terrible price? Of course. 2 plus 2 is 4. There's not some special set of rules that apply to financial management in the United States that don't apply to financial management in Europe or financial management in your own household. So let's get rid of this president who purposely spends money and drives up the debt because it's part of his grand plan to diminish America and everybody in it, as we've been talking about today. All right. We're gonna finish up this show with a tip for Mitt. Mitt, you need to get it together, big guy. You got to stop talking generalities. You got to give the people some meat. We've given you suggestions on our other tips for Mitts. You listeners can hear it in the archives on taxes, on health insurance, on all sorts of things. These are 1, 2, 3 bullet points that everybody can understand and applaud. And you and Mr. Ryan really need to start doing that. Your generalities are not going to work. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to take this election in the next 60 days, and you're going to make it an election on personality. And you know what? You're going to lose. If you're going to win this election, you have to make it an election on policy. And if you're going to do that, you have to have specifics that people can mull over, think, applaud, and agree with. All right, folks. Have a great Saturday. Thanks for tuning in. Next week, we have our interview with Ed Klein, author of the number 1 New York Times bestseller, The Amateur. And the week after, hopefully we'll have our follow-up with Dinesh. I will keep you informed of the schedule as we near the election, just less than 2 months out. Read Lance Rosenthal on the right side, KGAB, KFEZ, and WebTalkRadio.net.